From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As a scandal over family separation and detention continues across the United States, activists in cities around the nation are engaging in innovative and militant protest against the immigration enforcement. The city of Portland, Oregon, took the lead in starting an occupation outside an ICE prison that began on Father's Day and continues through today. Dozens of people set up tents and are at the location 24 hours a day, promoting their efforts online under the hashtag OccupyICePDX. Last week, the occupation resulted in the shutting down of the prison, with ICE employees leaving indefinitely. This week, federal agents have reportedly entered the building with some ICE staff to, quote, secure government property. Activists have been issued warning letters to leave the premises. Similar encampments sprung up in New York City, in Detroit and Los Angeles and elsewhere. Our news correspondent Arun Gupta has been at the Portland occupation reporting for Raw Story, and he now joins us from the encampment in Portland. Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. His forthcoming book is Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. Welcome to the program, Arun.
Thanks for having me on, Sonali.
So, Arun, tell me exactly where you are right now. Our TV audience can see tents set up behind you, but you're not camping.
No, I'm not. I am at the facility for the Immigration and Custom Enforcement in Portland, Oregon. And behind me, you can see the entrance to the building. I'm standing in what is the driveway. You can probably see maybe some tents, huge amount of signage, there's couches, and obviously this is not an operational facility. It's now, the eighth day of its closure.
Now, when did all of this begin? I mentioned in my introduction that since Father's Day, people decided to basically show up in front of this ICE prison. It's not very well marked as a holding facility, but people showed up, and what happened?
Yeah, no, there's no markings whatsoever to identify it. It's part of the secret detention network. So on Father's Day, they were protesting against ICE, and a few hundred people showed up there. And then spontaneously, about 10 people stayed behind and decided that they wanted to do a round-the-clock vigil. So there's some publicly owned land right next to the ICE facility, and they just basically slept overnight. By Monday morning, there were only two people who were left, and then word started to spread on social media, and by evening, there were about 75 people, and that's when I got here for the first time, and I've been here every day since. And in the evening, that's when the ICE employees who were inside started to try and leave for the day. Protesters locked arms and peacefully blockaded the cars. The police for the Department of Homeland Security came out and tried to negotiate with them. The protesters told them that the employees were free to come and go on foot, but that they were going to block the cars, because what they really wanted to block was the detention vans coming in. This has a 6,000 square foot jail that's used for temporary detention. Detainees here are supposed to be shipped out within 24 hours to one of three other holding facilities in the Pacific Northwest. So these negotiations ensued with the Federal Protective Service, that's the DHS police. And at one point, the DHS police pleaded with protesters, you know, can you allow these ICE employees to go home to their families? Needless to say, that did not go over well.
Right.
People were yelling, oh, the irony, and, what about the families you're holding?
So I understand that at some point, ICE employees did leave, and the building was, for all intents and purposes, shut down.
Yeah, so there were only three Federal Protective Service police here, and that's the thing. They started threatening to arrest people, but they simply didn't have the forces. And protesters say they could have easily been swept away, but there was a huge missing factor in the equation, and that was Portland police. They never, they still have not showed up. They often drive by regularly, and here's the reason. It's that because Trump's immigration policies have provoked such just widespread and intense revulsion, you know, the sights of children in cages, the sound of them wailing separated from their parents, that public opposition is so strong against Trump's immigration policies that the city had the mayor basically felt that he couldn't come in. And in fact, one of his chief aides was caught, a reporter for The Guardian, Jason Wilson, overheard him explaining, you know, if we have the police come in and escort employees, then we're complicit in the baby. So this was really a matter of public opinion. The next day, on Tuesday, June 19th, about a dozen DHS riot police came in. They formed a gauntlet at the side entrance and escorted more than 20 ICE employees out to a convoy and whisked them away. And so since then, there's been no no employees inside of the building. Now, early Monday morning, a contingent of DHS police came in, they threatened to arrest people, but they haven't actually moved to do it. There was a brief scuffle where the police were shooting pepper balls at some of the protesters. But
you said federal police were shooting pepper balls at some of the protesters. That seems to be the strongest clash so far between authorities and people and protesters.
That reportedly that is what happened. I did see some photos. I have seen the DHS police inside. I saw photos of the DHS police with what I've seen to be a pepper. It's a gun that shoots balls that are filled with pepper spray. And in fact, it took a little chunk out the side of the building. These balls come out at high velocity and they can potentially injure or even kill. These are not non-lethal weapons.
Less lethal weapons.
Yeah. So nobody. It was a brief scuffle. I don't know if anyone was injured. Essentially, the Trump administration has overreached, at least in this regard. And we see this tactic now spreading to other cities in different ways. In New York City, protesters there have blockaded ICE facilities for at least five straight days, preventing the vans from coming in. In Los Angeles, they say they're doing the same thing. There's a big protest in Tacoma, Washington, which is a large detention facility. Protesters in Detroit briefly blockaded the driveway to an ICE facility, but one report I saw said police came in and cleared them out. So Detroit, it seems, the police are cooperating with ICE.
So the issue of local police departments being present and being part of this government effort is critical here. So in Portland, where you are at, the police have chosen not to interfere, chosen just not even to show up, leaving it up to federal agents and or ICE agents to secure or to essentially drive you away. And I understand that on Monday night, so just a couple of nights ago, federal agents slipped into the building unnoticed while people who were protesting slept in tents?
Yes, and that's correct. They slipped in, but people did notice that, in fact, they evacuated the campsite because there's been some rumors that... protesters did actually notice that the federal police were coming in, and they did evacuate the camp in the middle of the night, Sunday night, Monday morning. That's because there are genuine concerns about state repression, given what happened in Washington with the inauguration, where over 200 people were indicted on these absurd, trumped-up charges, many of whom had nothing to do with the Inauguration Day protest there, and were looking at 75 years in prison if convicted. So on the one hand, while this is incredibly similar to Occupy Wall Street, the times have changed, and also the risks are higher. There have also been incidents with threats of right-wing violence.
I'm glad you brought up Occupy Wall Street. You were there in New York in Zuccotti Park when that movement exploded onto the scene. You're now here in Portland. And I'm wondering if you think that this is a tactic, given what happened with Occupy Wall Street, that, you know, maybe something long-term didn't necessarily come out of it, but it did raise the profile of the issues they were addressing in a very public way. And is that the sort of impact you hope the Portland occupation, or as it's being called, hashtag Occupy ICE PDX, might have, the sort of impacting the public discourse by people who show they're willing to put their bodies on the line?
Yeah, I think it clearly has. I had a significant impact there, and nationally as well. Like I've heard people say, and I've been saying, this looks like Occupy with a purpose. It has a clear goal: abolish ICE. That's what all the protesters want. Whereas Occupy Wall Street famously had no demands. I think Occupy Wall Street did change a lot of things and led to Bernie Sanders' campaign. But this clearly has a much more laser focus on a particular issue that's crucially important, especially today with what we've seen with the Muslim ban.
Can you describe to us the kinds of people that are in Portland right now in front of the ICE building where you're at? And what are the numbers like? Are people coming and going? Give us a sense of being there.
The best way to describe it, it's very anarchist influence, like Occupy Wall Street. You have a direct action folk. That's a car that's on. A lot of people come by and honk in support. Like, this really does have just a great widespread support. So you have the core of it is very anarchist influence. You have a lot of socialists here, a lot of people who are Democratic Socialists of America. The chapter in Portland, like around the country, has just exploded. It's gone from 7 people to over 800 people in the last couple of years. You have people who are anti-fascist, a lot of people of color, people involved in immigrant rights work. But one of the keys, the reason why this has worked, is you have all these parts that fit together. And a lot of liberals support this. There's a lot of interfaith community who I've seen out here. I've seen undocumented immigrants, dreamers out here. I met this guy, Ruben Lopez, who he's a U.S. resident. But a decade ago, he was in the verge of deport. He was on the verge of being deported. So it's really quite an incredible mix. There are people here from resistance groups like Indivisible. There's a group, Nasty Women Get Stuff Done. They don't say stuff, but I want to make them radio friendly. This is one of the, they say they have up to 200 people at their monthly meetings. And I met the president out here with her daughter and her two college-age friends. And so the liberals end up acting almost kind of like human shields for Occupy ICE PDX. They give it the legitimacy that prevents the city from being able to move in. And for the feds to move in, they would have to mobilize quite a force. You know, they would probably have to have a couple of hundred U.S. Marshals, Federal Protective Service police. And even if they arrested a bunch of people, what do they do with them? Where do they go? So, you know, this you know, on the one hand, it's very much day-to-day, touch and go, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is still there in another week.
So, Arun, I understand that federal agents on Monday gave out flyers saying that it was an illegal occupation and that there was a notice to vacate. Any sense of those? Have you seen those flyers, and do they make clear what they're going to do?
They did. They showed essentially a photo of the driveway that I'm currently standing in and the building right behind me. I'll move a little so you can see it. And they said that blocking or impeding obstruction would result in being charged with under two federal statutes. I believe they're felonies. Now, here's one of the real ironies here. This is the second occupation of a federal facility in Oregon in the last 2 years. I don't know what it is about Oregon, but if we go back 2.5 years, that was the Bundy occupation, the wildlife refuge. And they came in with guns and they occupied it for about a month or so. And the government ended up hitting up with charges like impeding a federal officer. The Bundys were acquitted. Now, the thing is here, nobody believes that they would be acquitted given this government and given also that, ironically, the public in some ways can be less sympathetic to people fighting for peace and justice than they can be to a bunch of racist authoritarian cowboys, which the Bundys were. So people here are taking a real risk, but at the same time, the federal government doesn't appear to be making any moves. What we do know is if they do make a move, it's almost certainly going to come in the middle of the night, as with Occupy Wall Street and a lot of the other occupations that were forcibly evicted. So, and it could happen at any time. No one ever knows.
Now, I understand, Arun, that the protest in front of the ICE building in or Portland, where you are, was also a place that on immigrants who were supposed to do their check-ins with ICE were to start showing, you know, was expected to go. And so people were showing up last week, and that's how it was determined that the building was effectively shut down. Is there any tension resulting from the fact that activists have shut down a building where undocumented immigrants are supposed to check in with authorities?
A little. You know, I have seen some stuff on social media in New York City, where they've also shut down the ICE offices. The group there, I think it's a Metropolitan Anarchist Community or something, coalition. They put out a statement decrying trying to pit immigrants against protesters. Because this, from what I've seen, there's plenty of immigrants who support it. Plenty of people who are undocumented. There was one woman who came out who's actually in deportation proceedings, who will be having a hearing today in Tacoma, Washington, who she came out in support of it. So people here who are occupying have tried to contribute money. They get a lot of contributions. So they let the immigrants who have to be turned away, let them have the money. And ICE has also said that, you know, if while it's closed, no one is responsible. Like there may, of course, there still may be some inconveniences. But, you know, let's not forget the real perpetrators here are ICE. And if there are negative consequences, I think this is would be a lot like what happened during the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. That same exact line was used by the right wing, by those who supported the racist regime in South Africa. Oh, this is hurting the blacks in South Africa. It's denying them development and jobs and goods. But time and time again, the anti-apartheid movement was clear. Any suffering is nothing compared to apartheid, and we fully support the sanctions. So I think that's a similar case here, that, you know, if there's any people who do are affected by this, I have yet to see any one who's come here be upset about it, who is an immigrant or has any sort of provisional or undocumented status.
Arun, what do the calls for abolish ICE actually mean? When people say abolish ICE, is this sort of a catch-all aspirational phrase, or are there real discussions happening on the ground as to what immigration policies in this country could look like? What ICE, which is essentially turned into a Gestapo force, what it could be replaced with?
Yeah, I mean, ICE did not exist until 2003 when the Department of Homeland Security was created. The thing about ICE is this interior enforcement is very repressive. And while, you know, the Obama record, is, we've talked about this before, is very mixed. Some of the worst stuff that he did was the interior removals, right? And are picked up and then deported off into a country that you have no idea about and where you may not even speak the language. Is it just happening in Latin America? It's happening to a lot of immigrants in Asia as well. So it is aspirational at this point. Now, tomorrow, the Democratic Socialists of America chapter is going to go to City Hall with a list of demands as what the city can do, but then they don't take any real actions. For instance, there have been incidences where government employees in Oregon have given information to ICE, and they haven't been sanctioned or punished in any way. Certainly, for instance, this building falls under various zoning laws. The city could take a look at that. I've been told by multiple people that this building required a special use permit, so it is within the power of the city to review and potentially revoke that special use permit. But what I see from a lot of politicians, they say, like, oh, Congress has to act. They, even though they're Democrats and Portland is this progressive city, they're trying to pass the buck.
So finally, Arun, you are joining us from, just as a reminder to our audience, from in front of the ICE office, ICE prison, really, in Portland, Oregon, that has temporarily been shut down as we speak. And I'm wondering if you can end our conversation by holding the camera yourself and taking us on a little tour with a running commentary. Face the camera towards maybe the encampment and walk around and give us a commentary, if you will, on what we are seeing, especially for our TV audience.
Yeah, so this right here is the front area. That right is the driveway of the, that this is what was blockaded by protesters. That actually is the entrance itself that people can come into.
And there's a couch. There's a couch just sitting out in the open.
There's many couches. There's one part where there's a few couches, and that was sort of the area for Shabbat on Friday night. And if it's the Occupy ISIS PDX is still there, we'll certainly have another Shabbat. You know, lots of people standing around, even though by Portland standards, it's still early in the day. There's just a couple of dozen people. People have built barricades because they're worried about someone trying to ram them with a car, as happened in Charlottesville. People have built barricades because they're worried about car ramming them.
So you're walking right now. You're walking next to these sort of makeshift wooden barricades that have been erected on which are posters and signs. Can you read some of the signs, the FCC friendly versions of some of the signs?
Yeah, this one just says abolish ICE. That is actually a really nice photo. There's one, I don't know if you can see it, it says stop separating families with two hands. Signs, plenty of signs about abolish ICE. You can see it through some of the tents. The tents stretch back probably about 300 or 400 feet back.
So a lot of tents that have just been put up, and then there's someone putting up a sign right now. So it looks like a pretty lively occupation. I'm wondering if it helps that school's out. Are there families and young people there ever?
Yeah, there are. There's kind of a children's a daycare and play tent for the children. I mean, it's a whole community in there, you know, and creating a mini society in 1 week definitely has led to some growing pains. Unfortunately, people have a boombox going, so let me show you some. I'll just show you some other signs that there are people that want to be photographed. That says, "When hate governs, we are ungovernable."
When hate governs, we are ungovernable, right?
So there you can actually see the kitchen. There's trolley tracks there, which kind of run this tourist trolley, and it has a pavilion at the station, and that pavilion has been turned into quite a large makeshift kitchen. There's multiple pantries, a medic tent, a security facility.
And a guy walking by with a guitar in his arm.
Yeah. I saw people doing laundry out of just a plastic tub yesterday. There's a coffee and tea station. You know, it's Portland. You got to have your coffee and tea. Multiple porta potties. Things are kind of, you know, going slowly, but definitely you can see it's pretty well occupied here. And that's the building right there as well. It's a pretty large facility, and the jail is about 6,000 square feet that's inside of it.
Well, Arun, thank you so much for giving us this report and for joining us from there. We'll continue to keep tabs of what's happening in Portland because, of course, each day that the encampment continues is 1 day more than the federal agents want it to continue. So we'll certainly follow the story. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Arun Gupta. He is a correspondent for our show, an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. His forthcoming book is Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. We've been discussing Occupy ICE PDX. You can find out more about it online with the hashtag Occupy ICE PDX. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.